The stratosphere is an interesting layer of Earth's atmosphere that's pretty much completely untapped. At a high level, we lean into the unknown of just pushing product into a marketplace to iterate and get feedback as fast as we can. Data is the most important to us. So when you think about a venture scalable business, again, sort of owning what we would call the stratospheric data layer, that creating new data generation from the stratosphere is where the majority of our revenue live.
This is the ProCo 360 podcast for people who love Colorado and love hearing from Colorado's most inventive and successful entrepreneurs. I'm Dave Tabor, and this episode is with Andrew Antonio, co-founder and CEO of Urban Sky, a company launching microballoons that hold 6 pounds of camera gear to capture ground images from the stratosphere. It's for all kinds of purposes like wildlife management, wildfire management, agriculture optimization, and disaster assessment, all kinds of things like that. I met Andrew at a Denver Angels event where he was presenting Urban Sky, and we got to talking when I learned that they're already underway, that they've already raised almost $10 million and have a backlog of clients. Well, that got my attention. So here we are in studio. Andrew, glad you're here on ProCo 360.
Dave, thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here. And thank you for making this podcast. This is a great part of the community.
It's super fun. And as you know, we met through Denver Angels, another great way to grow the entrepreneurial community in Colorado. But I gave an overview of Urban Sky. By the way, I love the name Urban Sky.
Thank you.
So, but tell us more about it.
Yeah. So Urban Sky is all about using what you said, small stratospheric balloons, but really advanced technology stratospheric balloons, ones that can be navigated, ones that are really low cost, ones that are reusable, which is the first ever reusable balloon in history. And we build a bunch of really cool optical systems and payloads that are carried by those balloons to image the planet. So we get very high resolution data for customers at a price that really beats satellites, beats aircrafts and drones that also capture data.
Well, I want to ask you more questions about that. But first, how would you define sort of the mission of Urban Sky?
Yeah, so at its core, we intend to democratize access to more and better data than ever before. And we're doing that by unlocking unprecedented access to the stratosphere. At our core, for our customers, we're a data business. We sell imagery. But internally, we're really a deep tech hardware company that's developing some of the most advanced stratospheric technology in the world.
So you sound like a lot of entrepreneurs under 30 who want to democratize something, right? So what's this whole, are you just selling images really?
I wish I was under 30, but I'm close. We are selling imagery, but we also have customers that buy our hardware. So we do sell the balloons themselves to the government, be it the Department of Defense or civil government agencies like NASA. So we're doing more than just selling imagery as a business.
Yeah, but what's this notion of democratizing? Is that just, come on, what is that?
Well, I think it's true in our case that like today, if you look at the imagery market specifically, the way I tell people is like, it's like buying a Lamborghini. It's extremely expensive. The type of people that can afford to use it, it's coming from very expensive assets. And so for us, we're making acquisition of that data much lower cost. So we're creating the Toyota Corolla of the imagery market. So I think it is true in the way that more people can use it than ever before.
Got it. All right. So now I've got a few questions to really sort of paint the picture of what you're doing. First of all, what's a micro balloon or a small balloon?
Yeah, we call it micro. You may think it's pretty big. So in the stratosphere, it's roughly the size of a 2-car garage. When we launch it, it's roughly the size of a small car. So, but for us and sort of my legacy and my co-founder and CTO's legacy is working with the largest balloons in the world. We used to build balloons that were 600 or 700 feet tall, like the size of a skyscraper. And so our actual innovation, the micro balloon, is building much smaller miniaturized versions of those big balloons. And that's a totally new category in our space.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about this because I've got some connections, some past connection to Project Loon, which was the big balloons, right? And they were doing other things as a Google X project. But you know, if yours is a micro, is somebody going to come along now and have a micro, mini micro? I mean, is like, how did you come up with this size? What made that work?
Yeah, great question. Well, I think if there's a mini micro, it'll be us. We feel like we will own sort of the small category in the stratosphere. How did we come up with it? Really good question. So all the big balloons that you know of, for those that don't know, Google Loon, Google invested hundreds of millions of dollars into very large long duration, multiple months of flight, stratospheric balloons. That project is no longer around. Mm-hmm. The differences in why we built small systems is those big balloons, first of all, they cost several hundred thousand dollars, about $500,000 per balloon. They take 15 people to launch and from a prepared surface, and they're very difficult to put over a target area. That's the most important thing, mm-hmm. is when you put one of those balloons in the sky, they kind of go where they go. You can try to nudge them around, but they don't allow you to launch from anywhere. You have to launch from like an airport. So small to us, it wasn't just we wanted to make small stuff. Mm-hmm. It was making small things because, A, it made them lower cost, but B, more importantly, it made them what we call placeable. Mm-hmm. So if you can launch from anywhere, you can fly a balloon over anything, and that enables remote sensing from balloons in
that
a way
makes
that
a lot of sense. Yeah, so you could launch from a boat. You exactly. could launch. Can you launch from the bed of a pickup?
That's where we do launch. So. So if you're in Denver and you see somebody filling a balloon in the back of a pickup truck, you found us.
Wow. All right. You've used the word stratosphere a lot. What is the stratosphere?
Yeah, the stratosphere is an interesting layer of Earth's atmosphere that's pretty much completely untapped, right? So it's an area above commercial airspace. So it usually changes actually scientifically, but it's usually starting around 40 to 45,000 feet in altitude, and it goes all the way up to about 160, 170,000 feet in altitude. So
above planes and below space.
You got it. Above all planes right. and below space. That's where we live.
All right. And you also talk about the kinds of images in terms of centimeters per pixel, right?
Yeah.
And at 10 centimeters per pixel, what does that mean to somebody who doesn't know this business?
Yeah. So 10 centimeters per pixel means you can see, for example, some damage on a roof. Or give you another example, you can see paint lines on roads. But what you can't do is see personally identifiable information like somebody's mm-hmm. license plate. So it's not that good, mm-hmm. but it's a heck of a lot better than satellite imagery. So with satellite imagery today, you can't see paint. You can't see damage on a roof of a house. So we're creating this product that is a lot higher resolution than satellite, but even lower cost.
Yeah. All right. We're going to talk some more about, in fact, I'm going to ask you this question right now. Why not just use drones? And, you know, I know there's a question with CO2 use and all that, but drones are battery powered now so often. So why not just use drones?
Yeah. Simple answer. The best drone in the world can image about 3 or 4 square kilometers in one day. Our balloons image about 1,000 square kilometers per hour, not even per day. So it's just a completely different scale. Drones fly really low to the ground and they can't scan as much area.
Why couldn't you put a drone up at 50 or 60,000 feet?
Yeah, they don't work. It's really hard. It's really hard to get.
The air's too thin?
Yeah, the air is too thin. It's too hard to get up there.
Is that why when you launch your balloons, they're smaller than when they get to where they're going?
That's exactly right.
The air expands. Yeah. Or whatever's inside. What is inside?
Helium, yeah, we fly hydrogen? With helium. Yeah.
Helium.
Yeah.
Got it. All right. So you've got all kinds of interesting niches. I mentioned rattled a couple off that just came to me, but you know, talk about it. I mean, some that are interesting, talk about like insurance, talk about agriculture, talk about wildfires, all those.
Sure. Yeah. So in the insurance space, we'll do a lot of like post damage assessment.
I mean, you mentioned roof damage. Can you really, using your balloon, if you went over an area where there was a hurricane, you could really assess damage on roofs?
Absolutely. Yeah. Wow. So if there's a hurricane that comes through, we launch a balloon and can show immediately what the damage is in that community to help people get back on their feet. We've done some missions in Colorado imaging river sheds, and specifically, it's public to talk about it. Denver Water, our local utility, has funded us to do some missions out in our river sheds to help them in their work.
What do they want to know?
For that specific project, we were looking at the effects of wildfires in the forest on the rivers, and they wanted to plant new trees to prevent sediment from going into the river that would then be more load on their systems downstream to process it. So,
and your images, Antonio, helps them do a better job than if they just drove a pickup out there and took a look?
Yeah, because a lot of times rivers are in the middle of nowhere, right? You can't even drive a truck out there, but our balloons could image the entire watershed in about an hour.
Wow. Yeah. So talk about navigation. Once they're in the air, you know, we've got, I mean, I don't know, you're probably too young to have seen Wizard of Oz, but the idea that, you know, balloons fly where they go, right? But there's something more there. You actually can control them, right? Talk about that.
That's correct. So navigation with balloons is nuanced, let's put it that way. So you can't steer anywhere all the time. What you can do is make a balloon go up and down in the stratosphere. So we call that altitude control. And that gives you a degree of directionality by having different winds move in different directions.
Because at different levels of the stratosphere, the winds, the currents. But are you monitoring those different currents so that you can move your balloon up and down and catch them?
Absolutely. Yeah, we have a bunch of software, not just a hardware business. We have a bunch of really awesome software our team has built around being able to precisely predict what directions winds are moving at different layers of the altitude.
So if you wanted to, if you needed to cover a certain square mile pattern, you could launch a balloon, have it catch a wave, float to where you want it, and kind of keep it hovering there for how long?
Yeah, so that is the number one request everyone has for balloons is, can you station keep? That's what we call it, keeping station, hovering over an area. In a lot of parts of the world, most of the year, you can do that. So you can hover a balloon, and we're working on that. So you know, keep stay tuned. But when you can do that, you produce a product category that is completely new, right? Which is persistent, real-time monitoring over an area constantly, 24/7. But it is nuanced in terms of geography and time of year.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's not perfect, but it sounds like it's pretty close.
It's getting there. Yeah.
So what are you doing in, say, agriculture?
Yeah, so we already support customers in primarily crop insurance, so we can do some aerial surveys to determine how crop may have been affected or how it is growing throughout a growing season, right? So a lot of those insurers are trying to understand their risk and their book of business and whether they're going to get claims, and we'll get that imagery for them.
What about the other end of it for the growers? Are you able to do some of this micro-farming optimization kinds of things? Can you, do you have sensors that can say, you know, what the humidity is, and, you know, I'm seeing some of this stuff happening?
I think it's a really cool application. I've heard a lot about it too. We don't currently support customers in that space, but the imagery would make sense for that application.
Got it. We've talked about wild... All right. What's sort of an application that you never thought of that's like come up that you're like, oh my gosh, yes, this is super cool, but you never dreamed of it?
I think you were about to say wildfires. That was when we started.
We could talk about that too.
Yeah. When we started the company, that was not front of mind, but now we have, so we talked about a 10 centimeter camera that we've built. We've also built another payload that scans for wildfires, and it does that in real time.
I mean, it can sense when they're happening?
That's correct. So it's a thermal camera on board.
Yeah. And so this becomes a wildfire spotter.
Exactly. So the use case there is if there's a lightning storm in the middle of summer in Colorado, we'll send out a few of our balloons to just scan for heat signatures, really small heat signatures that would be the first indication of a fire.
So that means who would hire you? The fire service would hire you for that kind of a thing?
Yeah. In Colorado, there's several agencies that handle fires, USDA, USGS. A lot of different people work on that problem.
But it's got to be a factor of 10 cheaper to put up a balloon and watch for it than to put one out once it happens, right?
I would think even more than a fire.
Yeah. Well, of course, so many of them will be wasted. Yeah. I mean, they're up there, they see nothing, and they come back down.
Yes.
So I think when you do the whole I don't know what the factor is. But anyway, it's interesting. All right. So let's take a quick break. I want to remind listeners, this is ProCo 360, named Best Colorado Business Podcast the last 3 years. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and this is the pod for people who love Colorado and the stories of Colorado businesses and entrepreneurs. My guest today is Andrew Antonio, co-founder and CEO of Urban Sky. Hey, thanks to our sponsors. Kinsley Meetings has been ProCo 360's longest running sponsor. Really appreciate them. They have grown a tremendous business based on a great reputation for planning and conducting meetings with lots of variables, lots of complexity. Also, Via Technologies, thanks for hosting ProCo 360 and all the great help your team gives me around managing the website, Colorado Business Magazine. Our partnership is one of building our audiences together. And as you heard earlier, Denver Angels, we're partnering to feature great Colorado companies like Urban Sky, who's part of their portfolio. Go to ProCo360.com and check out these great partners. All right, I want to, let's back up to sort of what might call the origin story, right? So like, how did all this start? I know you had some background in it, but how'd you go from your background to this?
Really good question. So you may remember the guy from Red Bull that jumped from a balloon a long time ago. Some of your listeners may remember that. So
you set the record?
He did set the record. We broke it. In particular, I give my co-founder all the credit. He led the spacesuit team for the chief engineer at Google. His name was Alan Eustace. That we built him a spacesuit and carried him 136,000 feet above Earth, breaking the Red Bull record where he skydived back down to Earth. Mm. We did that over a decade ago now. And that was sort of our introduction to stratospheric systems in balloons. After that, we went and were part of a company called Worldview that made these very large balloons, like we talked about,
yep,
for space tourism applications. So we were actually building a luxury spacecraft to be carried by a large balloon to 130,000 feet. So we could do a podcast in the stratosphere. That was the idea. Mm. Or drink wine or do whatever you want to do. So we built that company for about 6 years. I wasn't the founder, but I led sales, and my co-founder was the lead mechanical engineer. But this idea just always gnawed at us that, like, in space, we were seeing satellites get smaller and cheaper, and yep, nobody was doing that in the stratosphere, so we left the company and did it ourselves.
Yeah, but it's more of a journey than that. I mean, did you – how long were you, okay, unemployed as a founder, yet-to-be-launched guy?
Yeah, I think unpaid, probably more, you know, almost half a year, mm-hmm, while we were working on the idea. But it was a pretty quick transition, into, you know, as soon as we left our business, just starting to work on this new one.
So, but you had to invent a balloon. Did you have to invent it?
We did.
And the sensors.
Correct.
The camera, the visual sensors system. And you invented 6 months and you had something that you could launch and take a look at?
Sorry, that was not when we had products. Yeah. We were launching balloons early on, but not our own balloons. We were using test balloons and developing a lot of the subsystems, right? All the engineering process starts with just one brick and you build it into a house. And so we were building all the bricks of the system early on and testing those all along the way. We believe in an iterative engineering philosophy of test, fail, test, fail, test, fail. So we did that very early on. I think the first time we ever had an image was probably about 8 months to a year after we started the company.
But you said you were unemployed for 6 months or unpaid. So when did you start raising money around this? Because you had to have something that you could show someone before they'd start writing you checks.
Yeah. Around that time, we started raising money 4 to 6 months into building the company.
Did you already know people because of your background at Google and so forth that, you know, were watching you, you were telling them, here's a come? I mean,
Yes, our first investor was that person that broke that skydive. Hmm. He was the head of engineering at Google, along with a venture firm out of Chicago named New Stack Ventures. So, and that was a good friend of mine that I had known for over a decade.
So what did they see that said, okay, we'll write you the check?
I think a couple crazy people that they knew very well and trusted and saw a large enough opportunity that, again, if you go back to the high level, it's not just the imagery business. Like, our vision is to open up the stratosphere and create this underlying technology that once we've really been successful in imagery, we can scale into other markets like weather and communications and sort of leverage this underlying stratospheric intellectual property for a lot of different things.
I'm thinking, sorry, listeners, I'm pausing here because I'm trying to figure out, like, are all these satellite guys going to let you do that? Aren't they? I mean, they've got all these technologies. They're just higher up. You know, can't they take what they're already making and put it on drones, put it on balloons, put it on something else and just kick your ass?
Yeah, I don't think so. I think we understand the nuances of the stratosphere, right? We have to deal with weather forecasts in a way that a satellite doesn't. So it's different in a lot of ways, and it's not always better. I think we also want to paint the picture that, you know, the stratosphere will obsolete the satellites that operate above us. There's a lot of applications, mm-hmm, where you wouldn't want a stratospheric balloon. For example, imaging or flying or doing military intelligence over China. Like, we're not going to be doing those with our stratospheric balloons.
Right? Yeah, those are pretty easy to shoot down.
Actually, our balloons are pretty hard to shoot
really?
Down.
Really? Yeah. Why is that?
So if you remember some people may remember the Chinese balloon.
Yes, I do. Yeah. I'm like, why don't we just shoot it down?
So the problem with that is that, you know, the best thing the U.S. military has to shoot down a balloon is about $500,000 missile. And our balloons are quite a bit less than that. So they would be a lot very expensive to bring them out of the sky.
That's funny. You couldn't just shoot a bullet through. Well, of course,
you can't, they won't go that high. Yeah.
How funny. Yeah. Yeah, I hadn't thought of any of that. All right. So you guys have to, just to be clear, you have to bring together balloon and navigation technologies, image capture. Then how does the data get back to you?
Yeah. So we invented and patented a way to capture imagery from a balloon. So not only did we do all that stuff, we couldn't use off-the-shelf camera systems because Balloons have a natural rotation and motion that aircraft and satellites and drones don't. We kind of naturally just have an RPM in the stratosphere. We rotate. So we had to invent our own imagery method, which meant, to your question, no off-the-shelf software could process the imagery that we capture. So we built our own internal pipeline. We have an incredible team that built that out.
Is he not taking still images?
They are still images.
Well, then why does it matter if you rotate?
It matters to rotate to get broad area coverage. That's the short answer, is that if you're just taking one still image, it ends up being a small little image that's projected on the ground. But when we rotate off angle, we're not looking straight down. Mm. We're looking at an angle. We get this large swath. It almost looks like a donut. When you're flying, it looks like a donut going over the earth.
Huh. Yeah. All right. How did you know when you're ready to start selling something?
When our customers asked us to buy it, I think is
really
part of
yeah. Well, that's a great that's time a good, to start right? selling it.
Yeah,
but of course there is a problem if it's not really ready for prime time and you deliver it and then they think it sucks.
I think that's a lot of founders' fear and anxiety, but that's not our mentality. It's the faster you can put a product in front of a customer that believes in your vision, they're going to give you feedback and be with you along the way to iterate and improve your product.
Do you tell them, hey, we think we're 80%? Do you really want to pay us? I mean,
kind of. We say, hey, we think this is usable. What do you think? And is it usable? And what can we charge you for this?
Well, that's pretty good, except, you know, they always have high expectations. And even though you may want to temper them, right, you want to deliver something and you want it to work perfect, but you know it might not and your customer wants it. There is a tension there where they tell you, don't worry, don't worry, don't worry. But when it doesn't work just right, they don't like it.
Yeah, I think that's a challenge. But again, I think we, at a high level, we lean into the unknown of just pushing product into a marketplace to iterate and get feedback as fast as we can. Look, if we lose 5 or 6 customers because they all told us it was a trash product, that's more valuable to us in the next 3 months so that we can have another at-bat with 6 new customers.
Yo, no. There's got to be something in between losing 5 customers because they think it's trash. That really wasn't what you meant, was it?
Well,
or was
we actually haven't. Let me put it that way. That's not the way it plays out in practice.
Yeah.
My point is that's not the way our early adopters operate. They are truly invested in our success and have been there with us along the way.
Do they invest as well? When you say they're invested, are they also investors?
Not currently.
Yeah. Should they be? I mean, wouldn't that be cool if they were, and then A, they give you money, and B, they'd cut you slack?
I think it'd be great. Yeah, if there's any of my customers that are listening and would like to invest, we're open.
Now, you finally did, I don't know about finally, but you did get a big round of VC funding, $9.75 million last summer. VCs tend to want to see more than maybe your first investor, who just thought a lot of you. What did you have to show them, and where were you at that stage to get almost $10 million.
Yeah, so at that stage, economics matter for sure. And so we had demonstrable revenue traction, an indication of a growth trajectory that was not, you know, a couple percentage points CAGR every year. So they saw evidence of revenue in that growth trajectory, and we were able to show that financially.
Did they want to see, did they want to understand how your product works and all that? Or which was more important? You know, was it the product worked and it was cool, or that the money, the contracts booked?
Yeah, I think both at a series, we raised a series A. Both are, I would say, equally as important. I think when you get to the next stage, a series B or a series C, the pendulum swings to the economics, where this is an algorithm that they're looking at around what makes sense financially. At the series A, it's probably 50-50 revenue traction versus the team.
Yeah. So I see you've got a lot of hiring. For you, you'd never run a company before, and it's way different than being you and your partner trying to figure out how to make a balloon launch and get pictures. Now you're hiring management, you're hiring other people. Like, what's that mindset shift?
Yeah, it's a great question. Look, it's not that we hadn't had exposure to managing teams and hiring people in the past. At our last company, we were leaders in some respect there as well, and had some experience doing that. But yeah, I think it all comes at you very fast. It's more, you know, we're not just tinkering with our technology anymore. We have to take it very seriously and be deliberate about spending more time on the team, because at this stage we have 25-30 employees. The team is everything to us. The team is what makes us successful, not myself and my co-founder.
Yeah. But I mean, you have to go from, you know, tinkering yourself
yeah
to what? Yeah, I mean, I remember when I ran my company, I had to just not, I purposely didn't get involved in production because, like, how can you run a company when you're actually tinkering and you're actually doing things? So how do you see that?
Yeah, I would generally agree with you. I think we've had to elevate the way that we operate too and sort of take a step back to allow our team to make mistakes and fail fast and sort of just embrace the culture that and the way that we operated before. I think it's really important that the culture foundationally is set the right way so that people know what we care about as leaders of the company and how they should make their own decisions.
One of the hardest things I've found, I'd be curious what you think, is like when you're used to doing things and you've learned a lot of lessons the wrong way by making mistakes that cost money, isn't it hard to let then your employees make the mistakes you know are going to cost you money?
I think it is hard, but I don't know. Maybe I got there fast just mentally of like, I think that's what has to happen of maybe smaller dollar. Like if there's a very large financial mistake, it should still get to me and my co-founder, but the smaller ones are okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's cool that you're there. Now, you're also selling into two markets. Talk about that. The government market, the business market. Talk about that.
Yeah. So outside of imagery, like I said, we sell our balloon systems. So think of it as literally a personal satellite that the government can deploy themselves. Hmm. And in a lot of cases, they're not buying cameras from us. They're actually just buying the balloon itself and putting their own payloads on these stratospheric balloons, and one person can launch one of these balloons in about 3 to 5 minutes. So they are truly like rapidly deployable personal satellites.
All right, I got to ask you a question. First, I'm going to remind listeners, this is ProCo 360, named best Colorado business podcast the last 3 years. I'm your host, Dave Tabor, and this is the podcast for people who love Colorado and the stories of Colorado businesses and entrepreneurs. My guest is Andrew Antonio of Urban Sky. Go to ProCo360.com to subscribe to the newsletter, read my blog, link to sponsors, and catch the books I'm listening to on Audible. So, Andrew, getting back to, like, how do you make money then? Is the plan a subscription? Do you charge by launch? Do you sell product? It sounds like you do everything.
Yeah, we don't quite do everything. We definitely sell hardware. So to the United States government, we'll sell our balloon systems and the software that's used to control
them. Why couldn't you make more money if you just did it on a per use or an annual subscription? Couldn't you, the subscriber model, isn't that better?
So on the data side of the business, that is how we productize our imagery. We will sell you a subscription to all of the imagery we capture within the areas you care about on an annual basis.
Mm-hmm. So why sell product?
Why sell hardware?
Yeah.
Well, one, it's completely, we're defining a category, right? So again, if you come back to the stratosphere and our long-term or long-tail vision in the stratosphere, we make a completely innovative, personally deployable satellite, and there has been so much pull on that product from our government customers that this is a totally new thing. So we've leaned into it, and we've embraced it.
Why do they want to? Is it because they want to be able to take it to wherever they're doing missions and things like that and just use it themselves and not have to engage with a third party? But I mean, they just want to do it.
Yeah, exactly. So at the highest level, you know, there's a lot of interest in this layer of Earth's atmosphere around new applications, this idea of station keeping that we talked about earlier, that these satellites are not only personally deployable, but they can be steered. So it has advantages over a satellite.
I guess they don't pay Lockheed to launch the missiles, right?
I mean, I don't know. Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, they buy the systems, right? And then, so I hadn't thought about it that way, but I keep thinking about the way satellite operators do things, and no one buys a satellite from Maxar. They, you know, they license images. So this is a different kind of a way to do things. You're actually giving them a product they can deploy and use them. So you have to train them.
We train them. We charge for that too. That's part of our business model. But absolutely. I think it gives the government autonomy, which is important and is not maybe the current status in space.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting too, because these don't have an endless life either. So to the extent that a customer uses it, learns how to use it, and then the life cycle ends.
Consumables. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I mean, a balloon is reusable, but only how many times?
Yeah. So today we fly each balloon 2 to 3 times.
Yeah.
But in the future, we're working on that. In the future, it's going to get a lot better.
Yeah. Well, or I don't know if that's better or not. Consumable is not a bad thing.
Yeah. Our belief is sell the best product that you can to the user.
Sure,
that's what
we're
working on.
So how do you expect this to play out with your financial model? I mean, is it, do you care whether you're selling more product or more service, or how's your business built.
Yeah, data is the most important to us. So when you think about a venture scalable business, again, sort of owning what we would call the stratospheric data layer, that creating new data generation from the stratosphere is where the majority of our revenue will live. What's nice about the hardware sales today is that that product exists and it's very easy to sell early on in the company's life cycle, but we don't see it being like a large portion of our revenue long term.
I hear, and forgive me because I don't really know that much about this stuff, but I hear about like satellite imagery companies where they're like imaging the whole world or big portions of the world on an ongoing basis and then just selling the photos to people want. So they're just collecting massive. It sounds like yours is very different. It's very targeted. You go out, you get what you need, you're nodding.
Exactly right. Yeah, we're precision. So a lot of times satellite companies, they don't need all that data. Why are they picking it all up, right? And they have to make hard trade-offs about when they want to point a satellite somewhere, image something, and downlink it. I think that's the missing component too, is that downlinking satellite data is hard. You're moving a ton of data over the air and it's expensive to do. So we don't have to do that. We recover our vehicles and pull the cards off.
You do. So you don't actually, there's no beaming of, exactly. There's no transferring of data of that. So how long are your balloons up?
Right now we can fly them for about 10 hours.
All right. So up, down, here's the image.
Exactly.
But what about things that, I guess, can you bring them down faster if necessary?
Absolutely.
Okay. So if somebody says, I need to find out X quick, like a wildfire or whatever, a flood happening, you can do it, launch back down in an hour, 2 hours?
Absolutely. And we're working on payloads like wildfire where we don't actually need to bring them back down.
You
we have edge processing
it?
Units that can what? Downlink. Yeah, it's edge processing right. computer that can sort of look for signatures like a fire and downlink just that data. So we're not moving down all the imagery.
Or you could fly a drone by and pick it up.
You could probably do that too. That's not know. A bad idea.
Okay, there you yeah. go. We're going to watch for that. All right. Let's see. I wanted a couple of last things. Now, you're based in Colorado. Why?
Colorado's awesome. My co-founder lived here, but so I always joke. I'm like, the real reason is we had a free garage to work out of for 6 months. But no,
it worked for Hewlett Packard.
Yeah. But the truth is, like, particularly the FAA here in Denver, I have to give them a shout out. They've been so supportive of our business, and that's not true everywhere for experimental aviation, and the FAA has been really kind to us.
Because that's really – now, that's one thing I wondered. Like, if I wanted to buy one of your balloon systems and just for fun as a hobbyist, I mean, eventually you can't have balloons just being launched all over the place. I mean, this is really – you do have to control airspace, right?
Well, we believe you could have balloons launching all over the place, but you just have to do it in a safe manner, and you do have to comply with certain regulations. So, Dave, if you wanted to buy one – you can pay me to learn how to use it and comply with the regulations and you're fine.
But how does that work? Who do I talk to say, I want to launch this balloon. I don't want to interfere, right? I don't want to crash into a plane.
Yeah.
I want the people who are doing emergency helicopter rescues or whatever. They can't get, right? How does that all coordinate? Now you create a whole new layer of complexity in the world.
Yeah. But again, we would say a whole new layer of capability in the world and we do have to, confront that narrative. And I think it's really important to say that there's a ton of untapped value in the stratosphere, and we are an important part of the airspace system too, and we fully comply. So if we're going to launch a mission, we'll file a NOTAM, we'll file a flight plan with local air traffic control. They have the ability to track our balloons. So we know how to integrate into airspace, and we think it's important that regulators give us the opportunity to continue to expand that operation.
So this isn't going to be a hobbyist thing. It just can't be.
I don't think it will be. I don't think it will be.
No, it can't be. Yeah. All right. So what's going forward? It sounds like you see nothing but huge opportunity. What's the biggest challenge you're going to face?
Oh, what a big open-ended question. Well, I think, for the business, it's certainly important for us as we go to raise a Series B that we continue to show positive growth and momentum on the revenue side of the company. Is that a challenge? Of course, it's a challenge for every company. We're doing pretty well in that category.
You have a
right
backlog,
now.
Don't you?
We do well, have
dude,
a backlog.
What's that mean? I saw you've got a backlog. Like, what does that mean, really?
It means customers want us to capture data in more places than we're sort of currently able to do that, or buy more of our systems than we currently have capacity to sell.
Okay, I guess that's the definition of backlog. But are we talking about like a week? Are we talking about like, are you going to be able to meet that demand in a year? I mean, what kind of scaling do you have to do over the next few years to meet the demand?
Yeah, we're working on it rapidly. I think we'd love to have you come by the office. Without putting numbers to it, I think we're responding as quickly as we can to meet the demand as fast as we can.
That's perfectly vague.
Yeah, I know.
But I mean, do you have backlog from the Defense Department as well?
Certainly, yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That must be really gratifying. And is there somebody just waiting to join you in Stratosphere?
We have competitors. I wouldn't say it's like, you know, completely our environment. But again, those competitors are making systems that look nothing like ours. They're very expensive. They're not reusable. They're very large. Hmm. So in this small category, we truly do own the space.
Wow. The space. The stratosphere.
The stratosphere. Yeah. Sorry. The
Let's get that right.
Yeah.
Cool. What's most fun about what you're doing over the next few weeks, years?
I generally love going to work every single day and having the chance to work on something this cool. So we're all just inspired by a shared vision to open up the stratosphere, build an economy in the stratosphere. And gosh, near term, what are we doing? I would say keep an eye out if you want some imagery, cool high resolution imagery of Denver. We're beginning to scale our commercial imaging operation around the country.
Really? So could people buy it for art? Things like that?
Sure,
or is this
do.
Really just,
yeah,
do they?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of really cool aerial art out there. Check
That's
it out.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Hey, let's wrap up. I'm your host, Dave Taver. Today on ProCo 360, you've been listening to a really fun conversation with Andrew Antonio, co-founder and CEO of Urban Sky. Listeners, glad you're here on ProCo 360, where we say live, work, love Colorado, because you and I and my guests can be successful anywhere and choose Colorado. Glad you chose Colorado.
Thank you so much for having me, Dave. It's great to be here, and it's great to be in Colorado.
Yeah, I'm going to be watching for these balloons just kind of lifting up from downtown.
You know what?
Invite me to a launch.
That would be super fun. Let's do that.
Yeah. Hey, listeners, you make the show successful by subscribing to the ProCo 360 podcast. If you haven't yet, it's a huge help if you submit a review in your app. Thanks again to show sponsors Via Technologies, Kinsley Meetings, Denver Angels, and Colorado Biz Magazine. That's the show. Live, work, love Colorado.